Welcome to Your New Mexico Government. I'm your host, Kaliole Kolona. Social distancing has caused people to close the doors to their home as a method of protection from COVID-19. For some, what takes place behind those closed doors is not only a harrowing experience, it can lead to death. Our topic today, when home isn't a safe place to shelter. We discover not only the dangers that domestic violence survivors face, but what advocates, agencies, and the government are doing to help. First up, executive producer Marisa DeMarco has a news update of what we know today, Tuesday, May 5th, as of 5 p.m.
The New York Times got a hold of a FEMA document yesterday forecasting that the number of cases is going to spike and the death toll as emergency restrictions are rolled back around the country. The death toll in the United States today surged past 70,000, according to Al Jazeera, and there are close to 1.2 million cases here. Today, President Trump announced that the White House Coronavirus Task Force is winding down and will be done by late May or early June, and a new group focused on safety and reopening will take its place. Meat is in short supply at fast food spots and some grocery stores where they are limiting how much meat people can buy around the country. This is because dozens of meat packing plants shut down due to outbreaks of coronavirus, the Times reports. An employee at a meat packing plant in Santa Teresa, New Mexico, has tested positive for COVID-19, KOAT reports. Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham announced that starting tomorrow, employees at some businesses will be required to wear face masks. That's at restaurants and essential businesses with a retail space that is larger than 50,000 square feet. Health Secretary Kathy Kunkel said the state is also going to step up testing of guards and people in prisons. Dr. David Scrace, the cabinet secretary with Health and Human Services, said the rate of viral spread in New Mexico is not improving, and we're not on track to begin reopening in mid-May, KOB reports. There were 107 new cases today, bringing the total to 4,138, and six deaths, making the death toll 162. People here are still being asked to stay home, to wash their hands and clean surfaces, and to wear face coverings in public. The number of calls to police in Albuquerque about violence at home is about the same, officials said during a news conference today, but they've more often resulted in arrests. For Your New Mexico Government, I'm Marisa DeMarco.
My next guest is Pam Weissman, Executive Director at the New Mexico Coalition Against Domestic Violence. Thank you for being with me today, Pam.
Yes, thank you. Glad to be here.
There's been a rise in domestic violence cases around the state. How is the coalition responding right now?
Domestic violence in some places, and probably most places, is increasing. That's not hard to understand, of course, because of the stress and the unemployment and everyone's at home. One of the ways that our programs, and there are about 32 of them all around New Mexico, are working to try to help people is to be as available as possible. First, it's important to note that everybody's open. Nobody closed. Nobody stopped services. We might be doing them differently, but everything that we did, we're all still doing. And in addition to that, our programs are reaching out to people. They're having phone calls with people. They're calling to check in, both on survivors of domestic violence, and they're also checking in with people who are in their programs for having committed domestic violence, just to keep track of things.
Does this all play out differently in different parts of the state?
Yes, probably, right? In some places, for example, in Bernalillo County, the DA was reporting a pretty big increase in reports of domestic violence, 78% increase, something like that. In other places, there has been a decrease. So, for example, in some places in the Northwest, the police are getting fewer calls and fewer reports of domestic violence. So it's hard to know why that's happening differently. I'm sure it has to do with the degree to which people have options.
That situation you were likening to the Northwest part of the state, is it more of a thing where people are at home and suffering through domestic violence, but they weigh that against the possible risk of going somewhere, contracting COVID-19?
That's exactly right. That's what they're doing. Victims are not irrational. They're weighing the consequences. They're weighing the risks of staying against the risks of leaving. And so the consequences are different for everyone and unknown, but they're doing what they consider to be the safest thing for them. And they're certainly wanting to come to shelters less often for obvious reasons. And so we have alternative spaces, most programs where they've worked it out, where people will have a place to go. So I think that's important for people to know who are thinking about leaving. You don't necessarily have to be in a big shelter environment with 20 other families. There are options, and our programs all know what those are and can help people think through that.
What do you want any survivors who are listening now or maybe listening in the future? What would you want them to know?
If you want to get help, there is plenty of help available. Just call us, go to our website. We can help you find a program. And it could be one where you can be sheltered if you need to be safely. That's the important part. It's not necessarily an either or, like either I stay home and I'm in danger, or I go out and I'm in danger, I go to a shelter, I'm in danger. We have options for people to help them be safe.
What's giving you hope right now?
As a group, for example, the domestic violence programs, we've really all come together. I think we're all more empathic in lots of ways. We, I think, have come to appreciate and have gratitude about what we have. And we know that this will pass. We don't know how long it will be, but we know it will. And when it does, we will have a different viewpoint. It won't be business as usual. We'll have changed, I think, how we do things, how we think about things in a permanent way, and it will all be for the better.
I agree, and that's a hope of mine as well. I want to thank you for taking time to be with us. She's Pam Weissman, Executive Director at the New Mexico Coalition Against Domestic Violence. Thanks again for everything.
Yes, thank you. Appreciate it.
My next guest is Angie Estrellas. She is the executive director at Esperanza Shelter in Santa Fe. Angie, thank you for being with me today.
I really appreciate it.
Now, we're hearing that domestic violence calls to police are rising sharply, but that the state shelters, they're empty. Is this what you guys are experiencing up in Santa Fe as well?
No, actually, we are almost full. We had another family come in. We're about to fill up. We're seeing a big rise in people who are seeking help and protection during the social isolation and intense crisis. We know that both the, like you said, domestic violence and child abuse is on the rise.
Given this unique situation that we're in, understanding the longstanding problem of domestic violence and child abuse, yet people are forced to stay at home with their abusers due to the social distancing orders. How has that changed your work up there?
I'd like to just give our crisis line out on our website a few different times in case anybody's listening, because that's how we can help everyone. You can call 473-5200. We're here for you 24 hours a day. Just go to our website, esperanzashelter.org. So, Khalil, to answer your question, the way things have changed is that social isolation creates a more dangerous situation because the abuser is there constantly if they are out of work or also sheltering in place. When we think of bringing somebody into shelter, it can be more difficult. We have everything remote. And through technology, all of our services are in place. People can still call our crisis line and get information on how to join groups, how to get an intake, how to get an assessment. And so we have had a huge increase in costs, as you can imagine. You know, all the technology platforms we've had to invest in, the offsite location, rent, the increased food costs because we don't want folks to be going to the grocery stores.
Have you seen or heard of any innovative ways for people to reach out and let someone know that they're in a violent or potentially lethal situation at home?
Well, a lot of shelters also have a crisis text line, and that's one of the things that we're going to also look into now setting up. We've increased our social media presence so that folks can also get information that way and be directed to our website if they need help. Our crisis line is also open for sometimes men who need to get into our Path to Peace program, because the court orders are still happening. These are for the men who are choosing to use violence and force and control in their intimate partnerships. They've called to get information on how to enroll in that program. If there's anybody listening who's not court ordered but wants to get dealing with violent behaviors and get support, we encourage you to enter Path to Peace program.
If something could change right now, today, in our policies or systems, what do you think would really help out?
Locally, what you can do to help stop domestic violence is to support our mission through a cash donation. We have over $150,000 in unexpected costs. The need is very great. And even a $10 donation right now would help somebody who has a great need for services.
Angie Estrellas, Executive Director at Esperanza Shelter in Santa Fe. Thank you again.
Thank you so much, Khalil.
My next guest is the Secretary for the Children, Youth, and Families Department for the great state of New Mexico. I'd like to welcome Secretary Brian Blaylock to the show. Thanks for being with me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So we're hearing that domestic violence is on the rise, but the shelters are empty. What do you think is happening?
Part of the reason is just what happens on the lockdown. And so you have less people moving around. And we think that that's what that means, is that survivors of domestic violence, survivors of child abuse, it means that they're able to move around less and are less able to physically go and get help and assistance. And so certainly in some parts of our state, when we look at the domestic violence shelters we work with, the census is very low. Some places, though, the domestic violence shelters are at capacity. And some of those tend to be places where there are hotspots related to COVID. I think also one of the things we're hearing is domestic violence services are not necessarily at a lower point. It's just some of the shelters. And so folks who are able to provide legal assistance or are able to provide case management services and work with those domestic violence survivors, that's still helping. That's still happening. Mm-hmm. We have to be sure that we're supporting those folks as much as we can wherever they are in the state.
Now, people are forced to stay at home together right now. What are your concerns about domestic violence and child abuse taking place under those circumstances and situation?
I think that's right. I think for a lot of us, the opportunity to stay home and be with family is a good thing. And then, of course, what we know is for some of our most vulnerable in the state, it's the very opposite of that. It's harrowing to be stuck at home. And so I think we have tons of concerns when schools close. We worry about children because our reports go down. That happens during the summer as well. Hmm. You know, our investigators are still there and ready to be deployed. Our support line, which is a pound safe from a cell phone or 1-855-333-SAFE, is still available. It's still working. We're still monitoring those calls and helping folks get out to support. But at the end of the day, whether we're in lockdown or not, there's only so much we can do, only so many eyes we have. We rely so much on community, folks that are interacting with individuals. And during a shutdown, that's just less folks. And so we are encouraging delivery folks, folks who are delivering food. So, for example, our school districts have some great protocols and some great practices where when they're doing online learning or they're checking in with youth, they're also being sure to do that, where when the youth has an opportunity to be somewhere private and they can have conversations and really check in and see how the family's doing around food security, around safety, around all kinds of things. And so we rely on New Mexico and the community more than ever right now, and just want to encourage anybody, if there's any doubts or any concerns, they should reach out to us right away so that we can help.
And given that, have you all come up with any new solutions as this wears on?
Yeah, so we've been working with the Public Education Department and the Early Childhood Department, which, of course, formally launches on July 1st, to really think through what it takes in order to be sure that we're there present for young people, even while they're locked down, no matter how long this takes. One of the important things that I've heard, it's just a tremendous resource, is our NM Connect app that we helped launch with the Human Services Department and the Governor's Office. And it's available on the Google Play or on iPhone. And it creates it's a really easy mechanism in order to access telehealth, in order to get help, clinicians to get help with if there's feelings of anxiety or suicidality or depression. It's a great way to reach out virtually and be able to get that assistance virtually as well.
And when we last spoke, you mentioned caseworkers were not going into homes very often due to social distancing. They're observing the order. Is that still the case?
Our folks are taking the effort to do something we've been calling over-visiting, and our numbers bear it out. And so usually at any given month, we are around about 96% of our required visit total. Last month, we were at 100, almost 140% folks just constantly checking in with our families, track and becoming really wrapped into the fabric of those families. We're hearing stories from some of our workers. They get up in the morning, they have their breakfast, and while they're having breakfast, they call a certain number of their families or do the video calls. So they basically have breakfast with those families. Mm-hmm. Some of those families that we would only check in with maybe once a month or twice a month, we're actually checking in with multiple times a week. Okay. And I think the result of that is our staff has a new relationship with some of our families. You know, as we check in with staff, we've probably talked to about 500 of our staff members in the last few weeks through Zoom calls just to see how it's going, especially in the places where there's most evidence of the pandemic. And that's what we're hearing, is this real new relationship with families as they become more integrated into the fabric of the daily lives of families while they're locked down. We think that not only is this going to help with that baseline, ensuring that the family and the children are safe, yeah, it also helps us know more what's going on with the family and other ways we can help. In some ways, I think the urgency of the pandemic has helped us become the organization that we were already in the process of becoming, which is an organization that's predicated on being in the community with our young people, supporting the families, and really helping strengthen the families.
All right. Well, I want to thank you very much for taking time to be with me again. Secretary Brian Blaylock of CYFD, thanks again.
Thank you, sir.
This is Your NM Government. I'm your host, Khalil Ekolona. Every weekday, we're covering the way the virus and health measures are impacting people differently around the state. Stay tuned in weeknights at 7:30 p.m. Are you a survivor of domestic abuse? Call the National Domestic Violence Hotline, 1-800-799-7233. That's 1-800-799-SAFE. They're ready to help you 24 hours a day. Most students at the University of New Mexico moved out of the dorms and started taking classes online the last week of March. For students experiencing domestic violence who moved back into abusive situations or who are no longer leaving home to go to school, there are new barriers to getting support. KUNM's Nash Jones caught up with their old co-worker, Cole Carvor, the campus advocate at UNM's Lobo Respect Advocacy Center, to talk about how the stay-at-home order is impacting student survivors and the support services. Here's Nash.
I'm on the line now with Cole Carvor, who I used to work with at the Lobo Respect Advocacy Center at the University of New Mexico, doing advocacy for survivors of sexual violence. Hey, Cole, how are you hanging in there right now?
Doing well, just kind of taking things day by day as a team and as a center and personally as well.
We used to work together providing some advocacy and education services, but can you tell our listeners a bit about your work?
The Lobo Respect Advocacy Center is one of the spaces on campus for confidential and anonymous reporting of issues around sexual violence, intimate partner violence, or domestic violence. We also do education for students around that issue, as well as things like active bystandership.
Not only are people being asked to stay at home as much as possible right now, but many families are experiencing some increased stress because of this crisis. What impact could all of this have on instances of domestic violence? And are you seeing that impact at all in your work?
We are seeing that impact. I would say that as a whole, our center and some of the other confidential sites on campus are actually seeing fewer reports being made. The other piece, though, is that, of course, folks are stuck for longer amounts of time in spaces with abusive partners, also just abusive family members. So we've definitely seen a few cases where it wasn't necessarily an intimate partner, but other family members that had unhealthy or abusive relationships with one of our students.
And when you say there are fewer reports, that doesn't mean that there's fewer instances of violence occurring, right?
Correct. So generally, seeing more reports is a sign that people are more comfortable coming forward, talking about what's going on in their lives. So seeing fewer reports is not a positive thing. It doesn't mean that they're not happening. We know it's happening. It just means that fewer people are coming forward and talking to at least us here at the university about what's going on in their lives.
And when people do come forward, how are you continuing to provide services since UNM sent students and much of its staff home?
Most of us have the capacity, if students want, to do Zoom meetings in order to still see a face, be a little bit more than a voice on the phone. We're also taking reports for reaching out to faculty. I would say that more of the reports are coming through faculty. They might be struggling with their schoolwork because of this type of abuse going on in their home setting, and therefore reaching out to their faculty who then connect them with us, which is a really big help.
A significant part of your work is also referrals to community resources for survivors. Are those still available right now? Has the way people access them changed at all?
They are absolutely available. For example, Albuquerque SANE Collaborative. People might think of them only for exams around sexual assaults, but they also do exams around survivors of domestic violence. They are still open. They are still doing exams, of course, taking extra precautions around health and safety, although they always do that. There's the Domestic Violence Resource Center, and even though they're working remotely, people can still be connected with them, whether that's to attain emergency restraining orders or safety planning. They're still offering services, even though there are new challenges, right? I know on our end, reaching out can be a bit challenging because we don't know who's monitoring shared devices, shared email accounts.
Right. I imagine that's a pretty unique barrier right now. So if someone can't leave the house or are having their phone calls monitored, how might they safely access a helpline or some of those remote resources that you mentioned?
I would say almost all DV service providers on their websites generally have a button that will cancel out of that page in case someone perhaps walks into the room. They also have ways of entering your web browser with a privacy setting so that it's not saving the types of sites that that person has been looking up.
What in your mind is the biggest problem you're facing right now doing this work? What are you worried about today?
One thing I'm worried about is not only those who are currently experiencing abuse, but those who have just recently left an abusive situation and now maybe don't have a job or income that they had before. The danger of losing that new safe space is real. I'm worried that people are also really dealing with basic needs and maybe don't have the ability to walk away from abusive situations. Housing is always a challenging aspect, but it's even more so now, especially if someone has children with them.
Are you seeing any good solutions that people are finding?
Both the Women's Resource Center in Casa Fortaleza have been doing some online chat rooms. I think that can be a really useful space, whether it's someone who's facing imminent harm or someone who perhaps is struggling through this and the sort of mental impacts of that.
Is there anything else you'd like folks to know that I haven't asked you about yet?
As long as students know that we are still there for them, that coming and talking to us does not mean that they have to move forward with any kind of formal process, but they can at least get ideas about what options they have.
Cole Carvor with the UNM Love Respect Advocacy Center. Thanks so much for speaking with me.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much to host and reporter Nash Jones and KUNM for sharing that conversation with us. My next guest is Christine Barber. She is the executive director at Street Safe New Mexico. Christine, thanks for being with me.
Thank you so much for having me.
So today we're focused on violence at home, and a lot of people you work with don't have stable homes or shelters. How does this conversation change when thinking of that?
Well, actually, it is the violence at home is a direct contributor to not having a home. In fact, it is the majority of women who have left their homes left that because of violence. And that is definitely something we see on the street often. A woman running from an abusive husband, ex, a man running from an abusive partner, and just trying to figure out how to put their life back together when they have to leave everything in order to survive.
Yeah, and that's a situation that's incredibly difficult to deal with and to work with if there's not a global pandemic.
Exactly, yes.
Facing coronavirus, are many people you work with, are they forced to decide, do I stay in the home with this person who's been abusing me and violent towards me, or do I go out on the streets, take myself or my kids, and risk infection? Are you finding people who are having that conundrum?
Exactly that. Do I go on the street where at least I don't have this constant fear of being killed by this person? But the street is a constant fear of a different kind.
Mm-hmm.
When the pandemic first started, within that first week, we had three women who had just left their homes for that reason. We didn't press them on details, but two of them did admit later on, as they got to know us over the past few weeks, that they were running from an abusive household and they were in fear now that their partner was home all the time. And so that had driven them, because they were already on the edge of poverty, since poverty and domestic violence are so connected, that they were so close to the edge of poverty as it was, that moving to the street was a viable option and something they'd found as their only option at that point.
How are things working out for them now?
We only saw two of them again one more time, and one of them we have not seen again. The other two we saw once more, and then we never saw them again. The streets are a completely different kind of violence. And I would imagine, unfortunately, that they would have gone back to an abusive situation or ended up in another one because the streets are abuse. And so they are trading one kind of abuse for another.
Patrolling the streets to keep everyone safe is tasked to the police force. And KUNM, we've done a lot of coverage about police interactions and efforts by APD to improve their reputation so they can put away violent offenders harming sex workers. What has police interaction been like these days? What are you hearing from the people you're working with?
It is the actual usual mix of, boy, there's a lot of really good officers out there who are really trying to do the right thing versus the, I would say, 25 to 30% who are just never going to be okay with someone being homeless, which is unfortunate. It's unfortunate that that percentage overshadows the percentage that are really trying to be decent human beings and do the right thing. Tensions are rising, definitely, because everyone's stress level has risen during this.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know how that's going to affect that interaction, because that belief that the officers might not be the enemy is new out there.
Yeah.
And has only existed for maybe the past year and a half, and it's still fragile.
Mm-hmm.
And so it'd be very easy for that to be broken.
My final question for you, if you can make something different right now, today, to help the people you work with, what would it be?
Have bathrooms that they can use that are not miles and miles apart, and then have hand washing stations they can use every block. And then the other thing is to have them have safe places to remain.
Mm-hmm.
Their camps, so that when we find patients, which we have been doing, we identify patients, we can go find them again to get them into treatment.
Yeah. I want to thank you very much for being here. Thank you for the work that you're doing. She's Christine Barber, Executive Director at Street Safe New Mexico. Thanks again.
Thank you so much.
My next guest is the Chief Deputy Attorney General for the great state of New Mexico. For criminal affairs, I'd like to welcome Clara Moran to the show. Clara, thanks for being with me today.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be here.
The Federal Violence Against Women Act expired a little bit over a year ago and has not been renewed. What kind of problems does this create here in New Mexico with that being the way it is?
It creates many problems, especially for a class of individuals who are already very vulnerable. The biggest problem that it creates, of course, is a lack of resources coming into vulnerable populations. We have many people in New Mexico, many women, many men who are victims of domestic violence that need those resources so that there can be an intervention point. What we find is that the most important part of stopping domestic violence is that point of intervention. Whether it's advocacy, whether it's law enforcement officers, it's what breaks the cycle of violence. And so when we're talking about scarce, important resources, that's a huge issue.
Why does the pandemic add pressure to the need to renew it?
It adds pressure because we're in an unknown situation. As we know, what can fuel domestic violence oftentimes is financial concerns, definitely economic issues. And because of that, and the fact that victims of domestic violence, intimate partner violence, are oftentimes have nowhere else to go but to be able to shelter in place with someone who may be abusive to them. Shelters are extremely taxed at this point. Simply put, oftentimes there's nowhere else for people to go to get out of that situation, which creates a very horrific opportunity for spousal abuse or intimate partner violence and abuse of a child to occur during this pandemic.
The Senate has been letting this gather dust for months, and it does not appear to be even the closest thing to a priority, and we're suddenly in this emergency. What are the real chances of a renewal?
We're very hopeful. We have hope. Attorney General Balderas and 23 other attorneys general wrote a letter to the Senate requesting that they adopt the House passed bill. That was just yesterday, reinstating VAWA protections. That was sponsored by Senator Feinstein. So we are hopeful that they will hear the voices of the attorneys general, often who are on the front line of combating domestic violence. In that letter, the attorneys general talk about the high need for this, the disproportionate amount of impact that it has on Native populations, the fact that women are extremely vulnerable in this particular position, and then also talks about additional increases for protections that the states are missing out on right now, protections for transgender people and closing the boyfriend loophole as well. So we are hopeful that the senators will hear the request of the attorneys general and move, because our Native populations, our transgender populations, and many times vulnerable female populations, which is not to say that males cannot be victims of domestic violence, but are very dependent on it.
Will Attorney General Balderas look to move ahead of the federal government? Are we going to wait for the federal government to enact these, or are we going to act them ourselves?
Yes, we will not stop. Attorney General Balderas will certainly not stop. That is part of his mission. It has been part of his mission since the early days of his office. And I could see our office continuing to make requests of the Senate, the federal Senate, and federal legislators to increase protections. But certainly we will not stop pushing that same agenda at the state level.
Thank you very much for taking time out of your busy day to be with me. She is the New Mexico Chief Deputy Attorney General for Criminal Affairs, Clara Moran. Thanks again for being with me.
Thank you so much.
Tomorrow, we examine practices and strategies for conflict resolution at the home. People are around each other all day for going on 2 months now. Tomorrow, we take a look at how to resolve those conflicts and find reconciliation in the midst of a shutdown. We can work it out Wednesday on YNMG at 7:30 p.m. Find a full list of the resources we talk about on each episode and opportunities to help or donate online at bit.ly/YNMGHub. Time for resources. Break out your pens. Write this down. These are numbers that are important and that you might want to use. If you're experiencing violence at home or in a relationship, you can reach the Domestic Violence Resource Center at 505-248-3165 or at dv-rc-nm.org. If you're an UNM student, you can contact the Lobo Respect Advocacy Center 24 hours a day, 505-277-2911. The line for the National Domestic Violence Hotline is 1-800-799-SAFE. That's 7233. Call the UNM Mental Health Center, 505-272-2800. Alcoholics Anonymous, 505-266-1900. Agora, New Mexico Crisis Center, 505-277-3013. The Domestic Violence Hotline is 1-800-773-3645. Child Abuse Hotline, 505-841-6100. Adult Protective Services, 1-866-654-3219 or 505-476-4912. The City of Albuquerque Senior Information Line, 505-764-6400. New Mexico Crisis and Access Line, 855-662-7474. You can get the CYFD NM Connect app. It's a 24-hour crisis and non-crisis support and access to behavioral health professionals who can talk or text anytime you need. Okay? Anytime you need. It's available on the iPhone or the Android. For information on the Esperanza Shelter, go to esperanzashelter.org or call the 24-hour crisis hotline, 505-473-5200 or 473-5220. The New Mexico Coalition Against Domestic Violence. For more information, head to nmcadv.org. For Street Safe New Mexico, head to streetsafenewmexico.org. Hear us all week long on KUNM's airwaves at 7:30 p.m. online. Find the show on KUNM.org or subscribe anywhere you get your podcasts. Your New Mexico Government is a collaboration between KUNM, New Mexico PBS, and the Santa Fe Reporter. Funding for our coverage is provided in part by the Thornburg Foundation, the W.K. Kellogg Foundation, the New Mexico Local News Fund, and KUNM listeners like you. Your New Mexico Government is executive produced by Marisa DeMarco. It's produced by yours truly. News update by Marisa DeMarco. Thanks to KUNM and Nash Jones for their contributions, and thanks to Ty Bannerman and Bryce Dix for their help. Theme music is by Pope Yes Yes Y'all. For everyone here at Your New Mexico Government, I'm Khalil Ekolona. Thanks for listening.